Hello, you're listening to a Zen Studies Society podcast. To learn more about our community of Zen Buddhist practitioners, please visit zenstudies.org.
Omanakatosu, Dai 63 Soku, Nando Irui, Nando no Jubenke ni Iwaku, Subekaraku Irui no Utsu ni Mukatte Ikubeshi. Entangling Vines, Case 63, Nando's Other Realms. In his 10 admonitions, Nando Genjo says, work actively in the other realms. It's about noon on this day of Rohatsu. And this clump of earth we are sitting on with a molten center had almost 4.5 revolutions in that first half of our time here together. And today we arrive here at time to look at case 63 of the Shumon Kattoshu. And usually I say some things before I go right into the case, but today I will flip it the other way around. Today I will speak to you about the case first and then add to it after we have looked at this case. We are meeting today Nando Genjo, who appears in two cases in this Entangling Vines koan collection. And as always, the biographical information that we know about him comes from the Keito Dentoroku, the record of the transmission of the Zen school that was written somewhere in the 11th or 12th century in China. How much of it is really historically proven is not our concern here. That's the concern of the academics, who can go and try to dig out these folks' bones if they'd like and carbon date them. However, what we are concerned with is this unbroken life mystery. I don't know a good word for it, but it is still in connection with all the folks who are described in these records of the old masters and our ancestors. So he, Nando Genjo, lived from about 1065 until 1135. And he appears in two cases. So if you were here in the past and you heard a teisho on case number 40, Nando appears in that case. You might remember the case. It talks about a scholar who wrote a treatise saying that, well, spirits don't exist. And as soon as that scholar finished it, the spirit appears and said, so you're telling me I don't exist? And one of the answers to this wonderful presentation of the spirit is by the teacher of Nando Genjo, that is Goso Hoen, Goso Hoen Zenji. And then a second answer by the disciple of Goso Hoen, Nando Genjo. And it goes, they talk about, oh, if I had been the scholar, I would have said X, Y, Z. And then, of course, the student says, I would have done it completely different myself again. So he was a native, Nando Genjo, of Yushan in Longzhou, which is in modern Sichuan province. And here's an interesting point that we find in the lives of so many of us who are really interested in finding out about this business of life. And that is, at the age of 10, and appreciate this, please, this was in the 11th century, he became gravely ill. There were no hospitals at that time. There was no amount of medicine and knowledge in the way we know it nowadays. Of course, there was ancient knowledge of the Chinese medicine and of qi and all those kinds of treatments. But this serious illness instilled the wish in this very young man of 10 years. Well, I wouldn't call him a man. Let's call him a boy, 10 years old, to wrestle with that. What does it mean to be alive? And looking around, he saw that at that time, well, they are the Taoists. They try to find out how to live forever. I want to find out how to die and how to live. And who offered that at that time? Well, the Zen school. So his desire led him to enter a temple in Sichuan and receive full ordination in 1088. So he was 23 years old. And before full ordination, of course, there's always a time of being a novice. In our tradition here, when you are, before you become fully ordained, the type of monk is called a shami. And then when one becomes fully ordained, then one is a shamon. So he became a shamon in 1088. And after his studying at his ordination temple, he decided to go to the south. He trained under various masters, but finally he ended up with Goso Hoen, Wuzhu Faiyan. He received the seal of transmission from Goso Hoen and went to Mount Dasui, also in Sichuan, and established the temple Nando, the Southern Hall. Southern Hall. He later served as a priest at a number of important temples. So this is Nando. Not much more is known about him than that. He's not one of the goats, the greatest of all times in Chinese Zen. But he's still in two of these koans here. It speaks about something that he says in his 10 admonitions. Admonitions seem to be something that is fairly common in the Zen context. We just chanted Kozen Daito Kokushi's last admonition, what he told his students before he departed. He said, Angya no nochi, after this monk has departed on pilgrimage where? Through all the other realm than this human realm. And that is exactly what this koan is talking about. There were a couple of teishos and cases that just came before this case 63. There was case 60 that we heard here a previous session or two ago about Isan Reyu and him being reborn as a water buffalo. There's also a famous koan about Nansen Fugan, also about being reborn as a water buffalo. So this idea of going through different realms is something that we have to have a look at once in a while. In those stages, I pretty deeply went into the various realms that there are. We don't have to do that again. You can go onto YouTube and find out. Look for the Hotel Samsara that I described. There were the six floors, you know, and with the heavenly beings, the devas, living in the penthouse floor, you know. Then one below are the human beings on floor five. On the third floor, the asuras, the titans, you know, the titans that are like demigods, you know, who get on the elevator sometimes and go up to the penthouse and mess the place up. Then also we know about the animals, and then the hungry ghosts, the pretas with their little tiny mouths that are so small, it's like a pinhole, but they're really, really hungry. And their bellies are big and empty. And then what is on the bottom? Naraka, the Buddhist hell realm. And if you remember, one of the points that is made in this context is that none of these realms is permanent. None of the realms is permanent. You don't take up permanent residency in any of them. So there's ways to move up and down. And that has been used in history sometimes to motivate people to aspire to live on higher floors. And to tell them, if you don't do how I say or what I say, it's gonna go down. Now, of course, we know in the Zen context, this is looked upon from a different point of view. Many modern and contemporary folks like to give commentary on the six realms and say, of course, this is the description of psychological states. When you meet somebody who says that, please invite them to come here and to follow our schedule. And when they sit on the cushion on day five and their knees are emitting smoke and their mind is screaming, ask them if they still believe that these are psychological states. They are realities. And we all know that from sitting here over these last couple of revolutions of our planet. But that's not what we are looking at today, not the six realms again. Let's look at Nando's 10 admonitions. What are they? Here's the first one. Have faith that there is a separate teaching transmitted outside the sutras. Of course, when we hear that, we remember Bodhidharma with his verse where it says, Kyoge Bitsuden, a transmission outside of teachings. A separate transmission, Fudiomoji, not based upon scripture. And as I have tried to find a word for it just before, this separate teaching that is transmitted outside of the sutra. Do you have any inkling what that could include? What about sitting together for long times and getting tired together in this investigation? A teaching that is transmitted not by talking about it, but by putting on the kesa when the bell rings, by coming to the dining hall when the umpan, the cloud gong, sounds, by prostrating when the inkin calls for prostrations, and not just by ourselves, but all together as one body, even though we are distinct. And how do we develop that faith? By exposing ourselves to the practice as we know it. And of course, this is just one way. There are many different ways. None of them is fixed. None of them is worse or better. We just have to find the way that works for us and where we can contribute to that sangha that works together in this separate teaching. The faith in that develops in the same way that we, as a child, when we learn how to walk, develop a deep, not only ability, but a faith in that this Mother Earth will keep us on top of it with gravity. We're not just going to fly off randomly, but we know and learn that how this gravity works, how it pulls us to the center, to that home in the middle, the center of gravity. And we learn how to walk. And when we run, we expose ourselves to the ability to very sophisticatedly fall through this space without ending up on the floor. It's not dissimilar to this practice. By immersion in it, by getting up, by stumbling, and learning through that how this teaching that is transmitted outside the sutras works, we learn how to walk. To walk with that activity of Dharma. Here's the second one. Gain a clear understanding of this separate transmission. And understanding is such a loaded word. I always remember my first Zen teacher, Genro Seyon, telling vividly when he started to study with Joshu Roshi. He would go into Sanzen, into Doksan, and work on the koan, and try this, try that, and nothing worked, nothing worked. And finally, in desperation, he exclaimed, "I don't understand." And Joshu Roshi, of course, picked up his bell and said, "No need understand." Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. So understanding in that sense is very much overrated, because it's mostly associated with understanding it here. The understanding that is talked about here is a clarity of the embodiment of the ability to walk with that activity of Dharma. Going back to that image of us learning how to walk and not to fall. And later then taking it for granted That is just so, not because we understand how gravity works. No toddler who runs around, who is delighted of having mastered the ability to use locomotion to follow the mistaken idea of free will wherever they want to go. There's no understanding needed for that either. Danger with it is that we might take it for granted. And that thinking it is granted to us, and we forget about the wonder of the process of the acquisition of that ability to walk with the Dharma activity, with gravity, will only become obvious to us when it becomes difficult to walk. When you can't get up from the floor and your legs refuse to keep you upright. I think some of us have that experience when we try to get up from sitting. Then we start to appreciate again what we have learned to embody. And we also learn that this embodiment is conditional on the cooperation of that body. And the older we get, the less able the body is to cooperate. Not that it would be not willing. It is just changing. Gain a clear understanding of this separate transmission means to fully embody the practice as we know it here. When we bring our hands together in gassho and completely disappear. When we chant, when we make our breath audible and use it to convey calls for help, kanzeon, namu butsu, convey gratitude, convey vows, shujo mu en si gan do bo. Understanding. This is how we gain the clear understanding of this separate transmission. Number three, know the unity of the Dharma teachings of the sentient and the Dharma teachings of the non-sentient. Sometimes we don't take the lessons that the insentient beings teach us. We stub our toe somewhere. This stupid thing was in the way and I didn't see it. It's a teaching from an insentient being. And even though we say it every morning in morning service, even to to insentient things. Again, we forget about it. That these are also the members of the Sangha. The Diamond Sutra says it so clearly to us. This is not a stupid thing. We just call it a stupid thing. It is not insentient by the fact that we can make relationship with it. And so everything that we can make relationship with becomes a teacher of ours. If it is the doorknob, which we forget about so often, and then we walk through the door and behind us, right? Or if we walk on this wood floor, right? Imperfect relationship. Because what that is, hey, here I come. I'm an officer. Can you hear me? But very different when we make that relationship and understand that there is a unity between the Dharma teaching of the sentient and the insentient beings. It's not just what the Buddha said. The sutras that are being offered by the wind, by the cold, the rain, the snowflakes, which we just saw for a very short time, are very important. And we will be able to hear them if we open ourselves up to that clear understanding that this is also part of this separate transmission. Number four. See original nature as clearly as viewing it in the palm of your hand. And be calm and steadfast in spirit. So, related to that, I will read a short passage from Hakuin Eikaku Zenji after I will pick up the cup so you can adjust your posture. Hakuin Eikaku Zenji, who is presiding over us here from the Butsudan since the beginning of this Rohatsu session, he wrote in a piece that's called Sokoroku Kaien Fusetsu, introductory to lectures on the records of old Soko. He writes about Nando Genjo. And here is what he writes. Zen master Nando Genjo says that you must see your own nature. There's a Japanese word for that, right? Kensho. You must see your own nature as clearly as you see the palm of your hand. After seeing your own nature, each one of you must diligently continue to cultivate your own native ground. I want to fully impress all you patricians who probe the secret depth, great people all, with the need to put your innate powers to work for you as vigorously and relentlessly as you can. The moment your kensho is unmistakably clear, throw it aside. dedicate yourself to boring through the difficult to pass koans. Once you are beyond those barriers, you are certain to understand exactly what the Buddha meant when he said in the Nirvana Sutra that a Buddha can see the Buddha nature with their own eyes as distinctly as they see a fruit lying in the palm of their hand. Upon penetrating to see the ultimate meaning of the ancestral teachers, you will be armed for the first time with the fangs and claws of the Dharma cave. You will spot the divine life-usurping talisman. You will pass into the realm of the Buddhas, stroll leisurely through the realms where evil demons dwell, pulling out nails and wrenching free chocks and dispersing great clouds of compassion as you go, practicing the great Dharma giving and immensely benefiting anyone who comes to you from the four quarters. But you still will be the same worthless old duffer of a monk you were before, doing nothing at all with your time. Your eyes will stare out from the same holes in your face as before. Your nose will be where it always was. At this point, you will be the genuine article, an authentic descendant of the Buddhas and ancestors, to whom you will have repaid in full that incalculable debt of gratitude we owe them. This is Hakuin. See the original nature as clearly as viewing it in the palm of your hand. Pointing back to the Nirvana Sutra, where Shakyamuni said that about the Buddha being able to see Buddha nature as clearly as a fruit in the palm of one's hand. That's number four. Here's number five. Possess the discerning eye of the Dharma. Discerning, again, has nothing to do with being able to analyze. Here we come back to the sword that cuts everything into one, that discerns by cutting into one. Number six, leave no traces. Be like a bird flying through the air. A wonderful teaching. You might notice when you do Zazen here that you cross the traces of prior selves, of prior times, of someone who called themselves the same name as you call yourselves now. Traces, sometimes deep, sometimes beautiful chords of music that still resonate, sometimes deep wounds that are just crusted over. All of those would not be there if they were not left. It's a question of ethical behavior. How can we live in this world with our fellow human beings, with the insentient beings, without leaving these self-centered traces that are injurious and that create upheaval and difficulties for everyone, everywhere. Again, here, like a bird flying through the air. Birds are not born flying. They sit in the nest, little naked, ugly things, you know, not even their eyes are open. If they hadn't parents that would go out and support them, they would never grow up. We human beings are even worse. It's hard enough for a bird to peck its way out of a shell. Being born a human birth is auspicious, but the very act itself also quite traumatic. And then here in the Western Hemisphere, what happens once you're born? If you don't breathe by yourself, you will be stimulated. So, even birds learn how to fly. The same thing here as we had in the previous clear understanding of this separate transmission. So leaving no traces is really important. Traces, who wants to leave traces? Who needs to hear all the time, am I still here, am I still here, am I still here? Some sense of I am, some sense of identity, some sense of needing to keep it. It's like an entropy, you know? An entropy like a little spinning wheel that always needs a little more energy so it can continue to spin, because that's what it does. Now, of course, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a natural thing, too. But it doesn't belong everywhere. Having a self that is an I am self is very important. Otherwise, we could not function in society. But what we have to learn is, I've lately come thinking about it, like we have to become a pharmacist for this I am self that just dispenses the amount of it in this world that has a positive effect to the overall well-being of this whole system of the world. You know, when the pharmacist overdoses you, even the most benign natural thing, like an I am self, becomes toxic. So that was number 6. Number 7. Be proficient in both doctrine and practice. Doctrine and practice. Even though we might be attracted to this very practice just by the forms that we see here, because they naturally resonate with us, it is also very, very illuminating to learn about how it came to be that way. Why do we always pick up the first bowl with both hands when we eat? It's a stupid rule. Or I'll just do it because everybody does it. But once you know, why is it that way? Because it is the Buddha's bowl, the Buddha's alms bowl, which we heard about in the opening of the Diamond Sutra. He took it into Shravasti to give the people of the town the ability to practice charity and put alms in the bowl. That's why we do that. So, doctrine and practice, when they come together, make for a different embodiment. It's not just the knowing about it. It really becomes living embodiment, once that knowing is filled from the inside, fully knowing and having received this separate teaching transmitted through actually practicing. Number 8. Now, this is a translation by Waddell. Destroy the false and reveal the true. That's a very Western kind of thinking, you know. The false and the true. When we think about true and false, it's almost like thinking about good and evil, right? How many wars have been fought in the name of the true, blah, 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 you know? I would choose different words in the translation or make sure to understand that the false itself is still real because it is there. It's like the false is the idea of the world as a collection of separate things. Duality, dualistic thinking. That is what is ultimately, even though both are there, it is incomplete. Let's say incomplete might be a better word. Destroy the incomplete with the sword that gives life and cut it into one. And it will reveal the true, which is, of course, that what is. Suchness, tatata, dharmata, chinyo, that what really is, non-duality. Number 9, manifest great functioning. Yeah, what does that mean? Great functioning. Anyone here is manifesting great functioning? Of course, we all are manifesting great functioning. Aren't we alive? Are you breathing? Are your hearts beating? That is great functioning. But taking it from the physical level to the great functioning of actually as a person, as somebody with responsibilities, with consciousness, with limited amounts of having some kind of influence on this conditionality, how do we manifest it there, is the question. And all the preceding admonitions help us to arrive at a level of functioning in this great way more and more aptly. And finally, with number 10, we arrive at what is cited in this Quran. Work actively in the other realms of existence. The bait is out. Other realms of existence. Since we sat here, we know there are no other realms. You might have found yourself in hell over the last 4 revolutions of this planet. You might have found yourself with the devas, being completely one with the sound of the rain, the openness of the sky, or being in the human realm, unable to defecate, feeling really miserable because of that, getting closer to hell, feeling like an animal when seeing the food. All those realms are right here. So why does Nando admonish us to work actively in these other realms of existence. What we have to carry forth is that faith in this teaching that happens, even if we find ourselves in those realms. This is not an escape opportunity we have here, pressing the elevator button to the penthouse and staying there forever. It's not about the dwelling, not about the abiding here or there. It's about the journey, the great functioning of being that can journey from hell without any difficulties straight up to the devas. And as Hakuin says, dispersing great clouds of compassion as we go. Be intentional. Be aspirational. Carry forward that vow to save all beings. To become what in the human realm some people call a mensch. That is working actively in wherever we find ourselves within these realms. So I'll give you one more chance to move before we come to the promised part. So here I sit in the first Rohatsu, not many days away from the time Shingiroshi handed me the staff of the abbotship, leaning it in the tokonoma, in the meeting room, next to the calligraphy Shobo Kuju, let true Dharma continue. A wonderful Rohatsu session. We started out with 47. You might have noticed our numbers have gone down. And they haven't gone down because people would not want to practice. It is that a good number of our fellow practitioners were struck with sickness. Sickness that in itself also is another realm in which we at times have to enter. But unlike Nando Genjo, who lived in the 11th century, where medicine was not as developed as nowadays, we know a lot of things. But at the same time, we are still in the same boat, not knowing about certain long-term effects of certain diseases that are around. We all have survived colds. The flu is well handled. But we really don't know what are the long-term effects of COVID. Do we want to find out? Do I want to sit here and look at, no matter what age you are, seeing you in 15 years suffering from some ill effect that we don't know about, acquired at the Rohatsu session, in which masks were put on, but still by today, a good number of practitioners have tested positive. Some had to leave because of their underlying health conditions and might we all hope will be well cared for by the medical establishment. Sitting at the bottom of this triangle as the abbot, I do carry the responsibility for everyone who comes here, not just now, but also in the future. And together with the Abbess Emerita Shingyu Roshi and with our president of the board and of course also resident physician Hokuto Osho, we have come to the conclusion that it is not responsible for us to continue to finish the 8 revolutions of this planet and expose potentially any of you to this sickness. Nothing is set in stone. The great functioning sometimes function in a way that might be experienced as disappointment. But what does practice mean if we are not willing to step up to the responsibility of doing that what might seem disappointing, unpopular, difficult? So, with the apologies for not meeting this long day ending on December 8th, we have decided to end this Rohatsu session this evening after dinner. I'm really sorry that folks got sick here. I hope they all will be well. I have faith that you have been exposed to the transmission of this practice. And that's what we want you to be exposed to, not the transmission of sickness. You can write to me with complaint letters. I will read them and I will write back to you. It was a great time up to this lunch. But in order to come back here all together, all healthy again in the future, I ask you for your understanding of this decision, as disappointing as it may be. Please, whatever realm you go to, be careful. We haven't arranged for it yet, but we probably have enough tests if you want to know before you go home. If you want to test, we could arrange for that, I'm pretty sure. And if not, but be careful. Be careful. This is how cause and effect works. The only place to not create harmful karma is now. So let's please act accordingly. After this talk, when we close it, let's also forego the yoga class. It's a small room and it's only a few minutes because I just droned on and on. So let's just have a nice kinin, return to the zendo, have our yakuseki together, and really take the meaning of yakuseki, of medicine stone, to heart that this is the medicine we need to have the energy to return to the world well and healthy. So, please take good care of yourselves, and there will be session here, and we hope that health will return to all affected.
This has been a Zen Study Society podcast. If you found it to be of interest, please consider making a donation by visiting zenstudies.org/donate. Thank you for listening.